Hello and welcome to episode 6 of The Rotating Platform, a podcast about video games. Today is the 4th of November. My name is Matthew Castle and I'm joined by Mark Green.
Yeah, hello, I'm here.
And Alan Madrill.
Hello.
How are you
Is
guys?
That how you pronounce your surname?
I don't know how you pronounce it. Did I pronounce it weird?
I'm used to whatever. Known. I'm used to whatever. I'm used to Alan whatever. That's fine. That's how I pronounce it. That's how I do it. Although that does remind me of the time when I was introduced by Mark to Tim Weaver. Do you remember that, Mark?
Oh, what did I say?
Well, you said, this is Alan Madrill. And Tim said, Alan Badger. And henceforth, God, I was Tim. Badger.
I mean, he knew your name before you joined, so that
yeah,
was...
He'd been planning that facetious. Badger thing for weeks, probably.
What a japester.
So what are we doing here, Matthew?
So we find ourselves on a giant rotating platform, talking about video games, and every time the platform flips, or rotates, probably yeah. should be the better word, we discover a new feature on its underside, which we then engage with in the form of chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm ready to start looking all over this platform.
Great.
Yeah, let's get on that mother and go.
Yeah, the slogan of the rotating platform. So, yeah, let's do that after this.
And as we find ourselves on a new platform, it's a musical platform, this one. Beautiful sounds fill the air. And it's the sound of people singing game songs that they can't properly remember because they, you know, because they haven't been able to look it up or find out what's involved. But the rest of us have got to guess what's involved and what game
That's
it is.
That's right. Yeah, so we did some of these last week, and we asked you, the listener,
yep.
to send
well, both,
us some...
Well, both of you, to be fair.
Yeah,
Robert and Dave.
Yeah, to send us some sung songs, and we've got a few here, so should we try and recognise them?
Yes.
Let's. All right, so this one has come in to us from Jordan Howe. Here it comes.
Alright, so this is my a cappella masterpiece. I hope you enjoy.
Oh, he's introduced it.
Thanks, Jordan.
Oh, I know what it is. Yeah. Is that zero? Oh, it's going to do literally the whole song. I'm just gonna carefully fade that out there. Yeah, well, that's one point to us, right? We recognised it. Well, thanks, Jordan. That was I would never have got it from the first. I'm still not sure what the first bit was. Well done. Well done.
I like that. That was good. I want that one for my iPod. What are you listening to? Some random person singing F-Zero.
Right, this one's from Shane Brogan. Let's see how this one
It'd
goes.
Be great if it was also F-Zero.
Yeah. Let's see. We haven't listened to these before, so let's find out. Oh, it's
serious. Is it Deep Purple? Is it Crossroads?
Ah, it does sound familiar.
Is that the stage that leads up to the Bowser fights in Mario 64?
No, but it might be. No, that's wait, hang on. No, the Mario 64 is du 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 du. No, wait, it's no, I can't remember. But it's not.
Sounds like the beginning of Me and My Girl.
Yeah, that's it. It's from the Me and My Girl 3D platformer.
Is that on it? Was that on the NES?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Oh,
shall we? Shall I find out what it is? Shane Brogan, let's find out what it is. Oh, it's the song leading up to Bowser in Super Mario 64.
What?
Oh, right.
That's amazing. Matthew, you are freakishly good at this, I must say. You're amazing.
That's a point for us. The readers, the listeners, they've not beaten us.
That is... I'm in awe.
That's amazing.
Yes. I knew it was that or me and my girl.
It was a 50-50 shot. I'm glad you went the way you did.
Yeah, I think we kind of hedged our bets more towards me and my girl by the end. So, yeah, I'm not sure that is a point to us. Thank you to those, to Jordan and Shane, who sent us two very, very good renditions. So good that we got them. We got them both. So
we beat you. We beat you, listeners. You got to get up pretty early in the morning to trick these. No, what's the phrase? I don't know.
You got
that. There's something to do with getting up early.
Yeah, basically. You just got to get up early.
You got to get up early.
So,
oh man!
But that's not an invitation to send us incredibly obscure songs next time.
Do it. We can do it. I can beat it.
Have we got any between us?
I got a couple. I could like to run past you. I'm fairly confident you'll get it.
Shoot.
Okay.
It's Halo. It's Halo, Alan. It's Halo. It's Halo.
Ba, 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 ba. Yeah, it's Halo. Yeah, it is Halo. Yeah. I was quite pleased with that. I just wanted to do it.
I've seen a few videos of people doing that in underground stations and stuff. I got to say, yours not quite as impressive.
I liked it. Thanks, man. Little do you know that because they've remastered all the graphics for the Master Chief Collection, they've also remastered the soundtrack with Alan providing the whole thing a cappella style.
Yeah, you're welcome. In your house, if you want.
In your house. So you can either listen, with a press of the button, you can switch from the lush orchestral original to Alan in his bedroom.
That is available to you. Seriously, I'll do it.
I knew the power of Xbox One would become apparent sooner or later.
The power to put some stranger off the internet into your house. Yeah,
I got one. It's got like weird sound effects at the start.
Oh, perfect.
I love it when you do that.
Tick, 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 tick. Bloop, 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 bloop.
That makes me so happy when you make that noise. I don't care what it is.
There's no sound. There's no, like, melody. How are we supposed to get it? It's impossible.
No, that's because it hasn't reached the melody yet.
Oh, right. Should we just wait?
So it's... Bloop, bloop, bloop. Bloop, bloop, bloop.
Chick, it sounds like...
I'm just trying to think how the melody does go. I can just remember the noise at the start. I can't remember how it segues into it, but this is the main bit of the melody.
Yeah.
Do 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 do.
Sounds a bit like the Zelda shop theme.
No. Do do do. But it's got, underneath that, it's got like animal sounds. The sounds of rustling vegetation. Chicka 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 chicka.
Pikmin?
Yeah.
Ah. I'm surprised myself. Okay, I've got one.
All right.
But it might be a bit obvious to one or both of you. Ready?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got that one right now.
That was the sound of me trying to do several instruments at once. Oh, I've forgotten it. As soon as I start singing, I can't hear it in my head anymore. Oh, okay. Maybe not do the intro bit. Do it. you're not going to get it anyway. It's too obscure.
Forget. No, you will. Do the melody.
Oh, dear.
It kicks in a minute. I'll forget it. It's the one of the songs from Rhythm Heaven, with Rhythm Heaven Fever, aka Beat the Beat.
Which?
The birds.
Which?
The, you know, wah, 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 wah. Those birds.
Oh, if you'd done that, I would have got it.
Well, I didn't want to do that because I thought we'd given it away. Thanks very much to Jordan and Shane for their submissions. And yeah, we welcome more of your submissions. Now you know how it works and you've heard a couple of our listeners humiliate themselves for our pleasure, then you can do the same. You could be a voice on our podcast next episode. So send us your tunes. The email address is trp@therotatingplatform.com. So that'd be great. And we'll see you after this. So here we are, feeling a little bit dizzy, I guess, from being flipped upside down or sideways or whatever it is. Yeah. And
we shouldn't have done this just after dinner. That was a bad idea.
And this platform is etched with the words, what we've been playing. So that means we better talk about what we've been playing.
Well, we should, really.
So, Alan, do you want to fill us in on your gameplay experiences?
Well, I have been readying myself for the release of the Master Chief Collection by going back and playing the campaign of Halo, the first Halo game, Combat Evolved.
You're pointing your finger at us.
Well, we are Halo.
It's number one. This is number one. It's Halo number one.
Oh, right.
And it is number one in every possible sense. What a great game.
Which, the original?
Yeah, the original, yeah. But I've been playing the CE anniversary thing on 360. It's just so amazing. let me tell you, Mark, if you haven't played. It took me right back to when I first played it, which was, obviously when it first came out, a very, very long time ago. And it was an amazing experience. It was, you kind of forget now how revolutionary it was. Certain sort of conventions that we now take as standard, stuff like regenerating health, having a limited roster of weapons, and you can only keep two on you at any moment, and stuff like that. Like the control of the vehicles, that two-stick control system is totally weird and took ages to get used to. I only went down the ravine once or twice. What kind of amazed me. I was going through the opening few levels again, and it's easier than I remember, which is interesting. Either that or I've just got better at games, so it's probably easier. but more than that, what impressed me was it really doesn't hold your hand. It just plonks you down on this world, and the level design is what I was really paying attention to this time around, because it doesn't spoon feed you at all. It just puts you on this weird environment that is... You when you first go underground in the Warthog, right? And it's put in some twisty turns, obviously to get you used to the fact that the driving is totally weird. Mm. It's on like the second level. You're kind of going through that, and there's no explanation of who or what has created this thing.
Oh, I see what you mean. The sense of mystery.
Oh, it's amazing. I realise that's a big thing for me, is that sense of wonder in a game, where you're there and you're just trying to work out what it is that's going on. You know something... very powerful is going on and has created this thing, but you've got no idea what it is or what is ahead of you. But it doesn't spoon feed you. It doesn't kind of say, like, I suppose what I was comparing it with more recent Halo games, particularly, I guess, Halo 4, where it really was move to the marker, hit X, move to the next marker, hit X. But Halo lets you get lost and lets you, play with the different mechanics and stuff like that.
I was just going to say, I sometimes wonder if it lets you get a little too lost. Like, some of the interiors are, like, nightmarish to navigate, because they've all used this... I don't know if it's just a sort of a thing from the time, but they all use the same, the same textures, and it's, like, the same little chunks of geometry organised. So you can end up getting lost in, like, air vents or little kind of vent corridors for just sort of minutes and minutes and...
I see what you mean. I mean, even on the first level of Pillar of Autumn, those service ducts.
Oh, jeez.
But then there's those little visual cues, like you'll find your way is blocked or something like that. But then, you follow the trick of following the sound, and that'll lead you to where the enemies are. And just stuff like that, those little tricks of level design, or like there's a light section. You can see a light in the distance, so you're going to have to go that way.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's too bad, but I don't remember it being a problem when I first played it. But of course, now I know all the levels, so I don't find myself getting lost at all, really. Like, I played it before it came out through work, and at the time, yeah, I remember it coming into the office and people saying, like, there's this new standout launch game, and it's just totally going to, like, you know, it's just going to move things forward in the same way as, like, Ocarina of Time did or something like that. It was a real amazing game.
A game changer.
A game. I was trying not to say game changer, but yeah.
No. Because you're amongst friends. Yeah, well, I remember hearing about Halo, and then I think I saw a demo at, I think it might have actually been at like a Japanese trade show. I feel like it was in Japan. Anyway,
yeah,
it was obviously quite early, and you had the bit where the troop carrier opens,
yeah,
and you go out into the world.
Oh yeah,
and it was just super jerky, and I thought, oh man, this ain't going to be any good.
Well, that's the weird thing.
Mark Green knows knows a good game when he sees it, and that ain't a good game.
Yeah,
and I was completely, entirely wrong.
I know what you mean, but the weird thing is, I found even on the 360 playing it off the disc, it judders slightly, which is curious.
Oh, really?
Maybe the disc is a bit shonky. I don't know. Mm. But
that's why you need the Master Chief Collection with its 60 frames per second. Mm.
Oh my! Yeah. I've got to be honest.
You're going to play it all in order, Al?
I'm not going to get the Master Chief Collection. To be honest, I'm just interested in playing the first game again. Halo 2 is still very fresh in my mind.
I lied. This whole segment was based on a lie.
Well, I was
I'm getting ready for something I have no intention of buying.
Yeah.
What?
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, it's meaning that I don't have to go and buy it. I can, because I only really want to play Halo 1 again. I've not got any interest in playing any of the others again.
Right.
Because after Halo 2, I haven't really properly enjoyed a Halo game in the same way since 2.
Three was not good.
Yeah, I mean, Reach and ODST took it in some different and interesting directions.
Is that, Matthew's made the noise of the controversial opinion alarm going off.
No, it's fine. It was all the Edge 10 at the time, wasn't it? And everyone was going mad for it.
Uh-huh. Mm,
I've played, every time I play 3, including the first time I played it. That's the one that opens in the forest, right? I just, something off about it. I just can't.
It picks up. Like, I think when in 3 you're fighting those giant sort of scarab tanks and all that jazz, that's Halo for me at its best. You know, it's the kind of scale, and, you know, there's a sort of versatility to the way you can kind of approach every situation, you know, that you can kind of sort of game it and fling your, you know, you can jump your car off your warthog off a ramp and land on this scarab and like mess it up instantly. It feels like a very exciting kind of real battle zone.
I remember the scarabs making their first appearance in 2, and you're given like a bridge, and you can drop off the bridge onto the top of it, because prior to that they're set up as a real menace because you can't get anywhere near them.
Mm.
And then suddenly you're given the opportunity, you're given a rocket launcher, and you can get up on a bridge and get on, up on top of them and jump on board. And doing that for the first time, you think, does the game, it's that lovely moment where you think, does the game want me to do this or not? Am I supposed to be doing this, or am I the most awesome person in the whole world?
That's very similar to the feeling you get breaking through the bricks at the top of Super Mario Brothers.
What was your thing about playing hide and seek in World Cup on the Spectrum? Must be a lot like that.
Yeah, there's three very similar experiences.
And they're always up there. And those three are always mentioned together. It's always Halo, Super Mario Brothers, and World Cup on Spectrum.
Yeah.
They really are up there. Yeah. I know. If anything, I'm sick of hearing about World Cup on Spectrum.
I presume you're playing it on 360, Al?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the other day I stumbled on the YouTube video of the original Xbox startup, which was just preposterous. Do you remember? With the giant glowing green, like wobbly
coming
ball.
Back, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was, you know, very much on brand. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all part of the magic.
Yeah, with the enormous controllers and, you know, looking like Xbox. A sort of evil beast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that Halo reminiscence, Al. It's fascinating.
It's a pleasure, man.
So massively insincere all round. So, Matthew, what's been on your telly?
I have gone incredibly mainstream this week, about as mainstream as you can possibly go. And I have been playing a little bit of Call of Duty Advanced Warfare.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, which, yeah. Is it the saviour of COD?
Yeah, so I'm currently on a magazine deadline, so I'm very, very busy, so I don't have much time. So I've been kind of like doing little missions here and there.
Yeah.
But it's quite a lot of fun, actually. I'm quite sort of open to sort of COD. You know, I know it's not really a cool sort of view to sort of have. You know, a lot of journos anyway sort of sneer at it. You know, it's the idea of this sort of giant, gross blockbuster, and you know, it's got like not a creative bone in its body, and it just sort of sets out sort of, you know, milk this sort of huge audience of sort of violent teenagers. But you know, I enjoy a lot. I think it's a really, really well made game. I always think they're incredibly polished. The kind of polish you only get when you pump, you know, whatever it is, hundreds of millions of dollars into something.
I'm totally with you on that, Matthew. The first three Modern Warfare games are short, but the campaign of them is short, but so good.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, you know, a lot of people say it's, you know, it's nothing more than a target gallery. You know, you walk down corridors, people pop up from behind, you know, crates, and all the amazing stuff kind of happens in the background. You know, you're kind of, you know, you're shooting a man behind a crate while the Eiffel Tower falls over. You know, those two things aren't really connected. But, you know, you're meant to go, wow, look what I did. And you know that, but it's an incredible spectacle. And the thing which really amazes me, and it always amazes me about COD, but it's really kind of struck me in this one, is just sort of how much those guys have to create, kind of art wise, that you're just going to whip past in these kind of mad cutscenes. You know, because any level can have you kind of exploring a building, and then you'll get into like a motorbike and you'll zip down a street, and you're going past tons and tons of stuff which only sort of exists for 5 seconds, and you think, man alive, you know, this must have taken, you know, a huge, you know, amount of manpower to actually build something for such a sort of frivolous bit of fun. And this one, because it's got this sort of globe-trotting thing, and actually the locations that I've been to so far, there's a really good level in Greece. It's in like one of those sort of seaside towns in Greece with all the kind of white, you know, all the white sort of terracotta roofs and then the sort of the white walls and everything. And it's just a real gleaming kind of beautiful place, and there's so much like incidental character detail, but I mean, you don't have a chance to sort of enjoy any of it because there's, you know, some freaking maniac in a bell tower trying to shoot your face off with a sniper rifle the whole time, where you know, you just want to kind of chill out and you know, enjoy the finely detailed market.
It's just like my last holiday. It's terrible.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like looking at all that and kind of taking all that in, and they've had a lot of fun with the advanced warfare things. It's kind of set in the, I think it's like 50 years in the future, so it's all kind of exoskeleton stuff, so you know, people are capable of kind of clambering up walls. It's actually, you know, it's quite Titanfall.
Okay, so 50 years in the future, we're not talking lasers and, you know, jetpacks.
No, but it's got like, well, like this sniper thing I mentioned. You know, there's one person with a sniper rifle, but it's a future sniper rifle. Space rifle, which kind of hits with the frosty of a tank. So it's kind of literally blowing the roofs off buildings and things, which is...
That's handy.
It's really dumb. But it's actually a bit like... have you ever seen the Steve Martin film, The Jerk?
Bits of it.
So there's a scene in that where this random serial killer is trying to kill him, and he keeps missing Steve Martin and hitting these cans, and all these cans are hitting, and Steve Martin goes, well, someone really hates these cans, you know, not realizing that they're trying to kill him. And it's a bit like that. Like, this sniper manages to hit just about every NPC in the level except you. Like, all these waiters are just getting sort of evaporated in front of you. It's really horrible. And you're just like, oh, this is great. You know, I'll just run towards that person. And poof, you know, they're gone. Then you run towards the next person. It's like, poof.
Matthew's a double award-winning games journalist. He's the only person to compare the latest COD game to Steve Martin's The Jerk.
So, I'm enjoying that. It's also got this amazing sort of mo-capped likeness of Kevin Spacey.
Oh, yeah, I was reading an interview with him on, was it BBC? He was doing the rounds, doing press interviews this week.
Yeah, and it's sort of an unfortunate bit of casting in a way, because, like, Kevin Spacey is always evil in everything. Like, he's never a good guy. So when he turns up and he's like, "Hey, I'm going to be your best pal," you're instantly like, "Rrr, rrr,"
you know? It's Spacey alarm.
Okay. Yeah, it's like, there's no way out my relationship with Kevin Spacey is going to end well for me or the landmarks of the world, you know? Like, some stuff is definitely going to fall over at some point. But it's a really good likeness. Like, there's some of the facial stuff in it. It's absolutely amazing in that it looks... Because they're in these big exoskeletons, some of the characters, and they actually... The faces look out of place in the exoskeletons, like they've stuck a human face in a CG thing, even though it's all CG. It's kind of, it's got that avatar
they look
thing.
So realistic.
It's so realistic that it actually begins to clash with the other CG, which I think is, you know, quite a remarkable thing, really.
And did you press F to pay your respects?
I did. I pressed F to pay my... it's X on the Xbox. I pressed X to pay my respect. It was a very powerful moment.
Great.
You know, things like that are so dumb because, you know, you kind of press it and then I can't remember what I did, but like I messed up like a later bit or I exited without saving and then you have to do it again and it just kind of sort of undermines the drama of the situation where you're like, oh, here we go.
Not do that thing where they give him different voice samples in case you have, you know, where you, like in GTA,
like in
where
Breath
you have
Daughter.
To try the mission three times. So he says that he pays a different respect each time.
He's like, just like to begin with, he's like, why? And then the second time he's like, Steve, no. The third time he's like, I can't believe you keep messing up this graveyard sequence. There's no enemy threat in this part. How bad are you at COD?
I want to sort of hit that button like 50 times and really, really, really pay my respects.
It would be good if it was like Jam with a Band, that if you press the wrong button, then some spectacularly inappropriate thing would come out of
it. You end up like knocking the coffin off its stand.
Or just like, you know, insinuating something really, really nasty about him.
Yeah, yeah. You accidentally end up sort of punching the corpse's sort of mum in the face by mistake. Yeah.
Well, it's good that police never caught him.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. Also, like Steve Martin's The Jerk.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. It turns into an episode of that.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's a direction COD needs to explore. Explore more of that, please.
Yeah, more social awkwardness, please.
Okay, well, that's good. I haven't got anything to talk about this week. I played a lot more of Shadow of Mordor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still really enjoying it. It's definitely a...
What's up with your nemesis at the moment?
Well, I keep changing my nemesis. I think because I did a lot of the side missions, I kept pursuing the side missions, I just kept bumping into orcs everywhere. So all of the orcs are my nemesis. I just keep killing them all over and over again. And I think I said, I don't think I said it on the podcast, but it's amazing when you kill one of them, maybe you've killed him three or four times, maybe you set him on fire and shot an arrow in his face. Like the fourth time he comes back, he's just got a sack around his head because he's got no face left. it's just this sack with some rope around it. And he, you know, and he's just going, this time I'll get you. And it's like, yeah, it's not very convincing when you're just a walking Hessian sort of sack. but I got quite far now. So I've got the thing where you can, I'm sure most people did this weeks ago, but I've got the thing where you can turn the orcs to your side with some magic, hand magic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Branding them. Is that right?
Branding, exactly. And yeah, it's fun. I think, you know, the missions are getting harder, so there's a lot of fun creeping around. It was a ridiculous moment. I was playing it yesterday, and I had to... it's one of those moments where one of the orcs is trying to attack one of the other orcs for leadership. But the one orc was on a very small platform. It looked a bit like a kind of platform you would hang someone on, you know? I don't know what you'd call it, but, you know, very small wooden sort of stage. And then the other orc attacked. I think one of them had two, what are they called? Bodyguards. So there were four of these orcs. And then I think another war chief happened to kind of wander by and decide to get involved. And they all ended up on this tiny platform, like just smashing the hell out of each other, while I just sat at a distance, kind of just going, "Oh, well, what am I gonna do here? I literally can't distinguish between orcs. They're just all like very matter of factly, just like, yeah, we're all stuck on this very small platform."
Are you sure you weren't playing Gang Beasts?
Yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good. Shadow of Mordor. I still don't really understand the plot. I don't understand what that bright ghost guy is doing inside the main guy. So, yeah, it's good.
And now, this.
Whoa, that was quite a violent rotation we just went through just then.
You're all right, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm quite shaken by that last rotation.
Yeah, you almost lost it for a moment.
I almost fell off the platform, which would have been a disaster. I think that very aggressive spin was down to us being in a very different feature now to the last one. That's kind of, mm-hmm. you know, because I think the velocity of the platform spin is based on the difference of the next section.
Oh, God.
I'm kind of getting tangled up in the science of the rotating platform a little too much.
It never ends well. It's best just to let it wash over you. Yeah. We're on a platform. Yeah.
This new side of the platform... is the return of an old favourite. It's 100% true facts.
Yay.
Where our brave team of fact finders search the internet and various other sources of information for incredible facts about your favourite games. This week...
I've been looking in my encyclopedia this
week. Oh, really?
This week.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting.
Some amazing... facts to be found in there.
That is interesting. I've been consulting Hansard, the official record of the House of Parliament.
Oh,
for mine. So those MPs have got some good facts.
I just talked to a troll I found under a bridge in Bath. So
I'm not sure that all that guy's facts are actual facts.
Well, okay. I guess we'll find out.
There's only one way to find this out.
But. This week, our 100% true facts are on the subject of incredible gaming feats, which I believe different members of the team may have interpreted differently.
It's brilliantly planned.
Yeah, I'm going to put you over to Alan first, who is going to give us some 100% true facts on incredible gaming feats.
Facts, exploits, things you can do in games which defy imagination and indeed belief. Now... in Mortal Kombat, the original, there is a fatality where you can transform your opponent into a branch of Argos, complete with customers going in and out.
That's good. Oh, I wish I'd done these.
Yeah, I wish I'd understood the task too.
Oh, shush.
I just say enjoy Alan's while they last.
Yeah, brace yourself for the weakness that is to follow.
No wonder me and Matthew found it so difficult. We were off on some crazy tangent. Yeah, okay.
What else you got, Alan? All right, okay. Alien Isolation. It's possible. It is actually possible to creep up behind the alien and tread on his tail. Now, if you do that successfully 50 to 60 times, you can kill him.
That's true.
That sounds real.
Tread on his tail.
I haven't played enough of Alien yet to know if that's true or not.
He doesn't like it.
Of course it's true.
I'll warn you that.
It's 100% true.
I started looking on YouTube for speedruns of games, because this is what kind of sparked this all off, was the guy playing 3N64.
Yeah, I didn't explain what this was inspired by. God damn it.
Oh, it's inspired by that guy who plays three N64 games. He plays Super Mario... 64, and he plays GoldenEye, and he plays what's the last one? Another one, and it's Ocarina of Time, and speed runs them all at the same time and completes them all in under an hour. I think it is.
Crikey.
Anyway, that guy. That guy has got nothing on the people who do speed runs of the following games or concepts.
Yeah,
you can do a speed run of Jam with the Band on Nintendo DS.
Yes,
you can do a speed run of Noughts and Crosses.
Yes.
You can do a speed run of making a cup of tea. I got two more. Games that you can play in speedrun style. Number one is the ballet of Romeo and Juliet. Do a speedrun of that. And the last one is running 100 metres really fast.
Ah, great. So loads of stuff I've learnt there.
Yeah, it's full of facts. You see, every day is a school day.
That is some strong facts. You see,
so what about us, Matthew? What
you see, I interpreted this task as a world record feat. So actually, your speed run ties into it. So I've gone with some.
Me too.
I warn you, these aren't as zany as Alan's.
No, mine.
I'm bracing
mine
myself for 100% true facts.
So here is my first true fact, and this is an incredible gaming record. 17 minutes is the longest anyone has been able to endure GEC 64.
Yes. Next, Matthew.
The world record for the largest video game cosplay gathering was almost set in London until a Pac-Man cosplayer ate 5 ghost cosplayers, ruining both the attempt and the general mood of the day.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's true.
Okay.
That's all true.
Okay, I got a couple more. So Kevin Jenkins of Ferndown in Dorset holds the world record for eating video games. He's eaten 17 video games. This is not very good. And my last record that I discovered. The angriest gamer is Bobby Stringer of Ramsgate in Kent, who once got so angry at Dark Souls that his neighbours could hear him over their telly.
That is an overwhelming true fact.
It's a very angry, very angry.
I have a couple more records.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I didn't know you had some more, Matthew.
Yeah, just a couple. The longest ever Mario marathon lasted 382 hours, at which point Mario's shoes wore down and he refused to move anymore. That's true. I watched it all on YouTube. It was amazing. A speedrunner managed to finish Ocarina of Time in 10 minutes by offering the first boss, Goma, a bag of sweets to ride its back all the way to Ganon's castle.
Oh, now that's...
That's a speedrunning technique not many people know, but it does work.
No. Wow, that's going to transform the Zelda world record.
Yeah, trust me, when people say that, it's going to blow their minds. Finally, while many people try to break world records in Super Mario Brothers, well, what you don't know is that Shigeru Miyamoto himself is a record breaker for fitting 7 Game Boy Micros in his mouth at once. So that's true.
What a wonderful image.
Yeah, so there you go. Those are my gaming feats. Well, no, not my gaming feats. They're ones I've observed.
That's right, yeah. You certainly didn't come up with them yourself.
No.
Preposterous. No. Great. Well, I think we just about pulled it off, despite the completely different interpretations of what we're supposed to come up with. So
let's face it, we've all built careers on that, haven't we?
I wish I'd known the actual task. I've got some good ones. Like I've already got some like things that could be gaming feats.
Yeah. Right.
It's all good.
Someone get us out of here.
Here's another 100% true fact for you. It's time for this.
A new platform. Look at it.
Oh,
look
wow.
at it.
Oh.
There's writing on this platform.
What?
It's a very long, longish series of words.
Yeah.
It's an article. It's the text of an article from. Oh, this must be what we've read this week.
Yeah. So the platform contains what we have read. For some reason, there's some copyright infringement going on because it's the exact text copied from Eurogamer.net.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Tell us about it, Al.
What I read this week was an article by Mr. Martin Robinson on the Eurogamer website. And it's published on the 1st of November, and the title of it is called Death to the Minimap. Why it's Whoa. Time to tear up the open world genre's greatest crutch. Now, Martin has a bee in his bonnet about the fact that in a lot of games, you can see a little Wii map off to the bottom left or somewhere like that, or might be the top right, and it kind of...
Or the top left.
Or well, rarely. Any of the corners. Any of the corners.
Well, rarely. Rarely is it top left. Or is it? Okay. Well, I don't know. Write in, readers. Let us know.
Let us know your favourite map placement.
Yeah. So in Forza 2, which he particularly describes, it removes the sense of engagement with the environment and, like, you know, you should just be in the world and you should just be kind of feeling your way as you would in the real world. You wouldn't have a little wee map telling you where to go. I thought about if you did scrap the idea of the mini-map as an idea, if you said your game is not going to have a mini-map, it would force you, if presuming you're doing some sort of big game like GTA or something like that, it would force you to come up with, you know, to make real use of stuff like road signs, which some games do, particularly, with the sort of driving type stuff, you can see road signs. Mm. Or you could stop and ask someone, excuse me, do you know the way to my next objective?
Oh, I'd love that if just every NPC just points at your nearest objective. So they're all like, that way, go that way, to the bank.
That way. But stuff like that would, you know, it would, like, the restriction would force developers and designers into coming up with some really creative solutions. So I think it'd be quite interesting.
Whether you sort of over-rely on the map itself, like, I do quite like sort of filling in a map, you know, where you kind of sort of find new bits and you kind of sort of pushing into sort of new areas and you're kind of sort of, you know, marking it all down. You know, I like the idea of piecing together a map and it becoming more useful. And maybe the problem is where a game gives you, like, a complete mini-map, you know, like Assassin's Creed, it's a little bit kind of, you know, you have to press sort of climb up one building and all of a sudden every precious item within 10 miles is suddenly... Yeah. You know, on the map, and it kind of takes away some of the, you know, then it just does become a, like, you're hoovering up icons from a mini map. I think Assassin's Creed was probably, I would imagine, they had in mind when they wrote that, because it's like that's the biggest kind of, that's
Assassin's
most guilty.
Creed is referenced to, and you do feel that terrible compulsion to wipe all the little white icons off the map.
And that's one of those things. But I like the idea of sort of filling in a map and kind of it becoming valuable only as you make it valuable, you know, by going to these places and marking things. I'd like a mini-map. Basically, I want to draw my own mini-map.
Oh, that said, there is little more I hate in this world than games which come with a physical map.
Oh, really?
I hate that. Yeah, I hate
it. What do you mean, a fold-out paper map?
Yeah, a fold-out paper map or cloth in the special edition. Can't bear it. Can't be doing with it. Because it presupposes that I'm going to put this thing on my wall or something like that. Which,
well, no, so you have it on the sofa next to you going, where's that bank again in GTA?
No, I don't want to do, I really don't want to do that. Wow. I'd much prefer to see that in-game. I much prefer.
They're very hard to fold up and put back in, I find. I'm not very good at folding maps.
You need to pay attention to the direction of the fold. So who... So do you... I've solved that problem.
Thanks for that wisdom.
Yeah.
Pay attention to... I tell you what, I definitely don't want... I don't want Far Cry 2, where I have to hold the map up in front of my face in-game. When you're driving, you have to actually bring the map up with these two hands. And you're like, what am I doing? You know, it would just be ridiculous. Like, if you imagined that in third person, seeing this person driving along in a Jeep, and as they're moving, they hold up a huge map with two hands. And they're kind of just looking at that, going, where am I on this map?
Yeah, a map that actually has a flashing cursor of where they are, a magic map.
Yeah, no, it's like a magic, you know, it's like, oh, this is really realistic, except it's got magical ink. It's basically like a map from Harry Potter. So,
So they
somewhere, you know, there's footage. That's on one of those footage programs like, 99 of the world's most idiotic drivers. Look at this idiot.
Yeah, it's some dude just with a face full of map. Yeah. The Witcher 2's minimap is incredible because they forgot the compass. They forgot to put north on it. So you have no idea what direction you're going. You don't know if you're heading in the right direction at any one point because it spins and it doesn't have north on it. So you just have to pray that you're heading towards the village that you wanted to head towards. It's like, oh, I think probably this is northwest, I guess. You know, I'll give it a go, see what happens.
I like the idea of just a hero that gets lost in their own game world.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's like, the village is being pillaged to the east, and you end up at the west village. And they're like, what are you doing here? And you're like, I'm here to... No? Oh, no.
You genuinely get these moments where there's one of the first villages you go to, it's quite a big sort of village. It's like the kind of main village in, you know, that sort of home village in an Elder Scrolls game. And you, there's a little wood outside. I mean, it looks beautiful. You know, it's very lush and overgrown. And I seriously ran for 5 minutes and ended up back at the same tree that I'd run from.
Hey?
Because, yeah, I was just like, I just don't know where I'm going. Oh, I'll go down this path. Oh, I guess I'll turn left here. Oh, I'm back at the same tree again. It was like genuinely being lost in a forest. It was ridiculous. It's really frustrating because there was some giant, like, evil spider or something, like, in off in one direction in this forest. And I just keep running into him. It was it wasn't bad in an embarrassing sense, like when you see someone at the supermarket and in every aisle. It was bad in a, I'm going to get killed by this spider again sense. you know what I mean?
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. Oh, you again. Oh.
Yeah. That's not bad. That's fun.
What, repeated spider incidents?
No, like bumping into someone in a supermarket. It's like a little, like, you get a little narrative going.
Oh, really? You must be the only person who enjoys that. That's
I don't know, because you get to see, like, what they've been buying. I don't know, anyway.
I think you've revealed too much of yourself there, Matthew.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Oh, mini-maps. Has anyone else seen, heard, or listened to anything this week?
I have both seen and listened to the musical experience that is Video Games Live. Which is, for the uninitiated, it's a big concert, travels the world playing video game music, organised by a man named Tommy Tallarico, who was a video game composer. I think he's mainly Video Games Live now, but he did... He did such tunes as Earthworm Jim. And I think he might have been involved in, like, Sonic 3 or something.
How does Earthworm Jim go?
Pardon?
How does it go?
He played it, and I have no idea how it went.
Does it go, diggy, 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 beep, 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 blue, 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 blue?
It goes, chick, 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 chick. Chick, 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 chick. Well... The thing about Video Games Live is that they don't sound much like how you remember them, because A, they're played by an orchestra, which is awesome, so it's like classic bleepy bloopy tunes, but played with this big lush sort of orchestra, great sound, but then you also don't recognise them, because over the top of that orchestra, for some of the songs anyway, Tommy Tallarico, who is quite a showman, comes out and sort of wails on an electric guitar, which is quite something when it's kind of... you know, Monkey Island, which doesn't really have that kind of vibe going to it. And hey, like, I don't want to be mean to Tallarico because he's organised the concert and I had fun time, but, like, I enjoyed it most when he wasn't on stage, because it then becomes, like, a bizarre, like, one-man rock concert, except it's quite a nerdy thing. So you've got Halo and you've got, like, a huge choir singing the Halo, you know, and that's all great. And then over the top of it, you've got him sort of going, and you're like... It's just kind of like, you know,
everything in your world sounds exactly the same. Any instrument.
It's kind of sort of Halo mixed with sort of Bill and Ted. So that's kind of you know, if that's your bag.
So but, what other tunes did they get through?
So they did the Halo. They did Halo. They did that there Halo. They did a bit of Skyrim, which was very popular because they had a big orchestra of men doing all the ho, ho, ho in the background, which was quite exciting.
Was it 80 hours long?
Yeah, it wasn't. No, yeah, it lasted 100 hours. They did literally the whole soundtrack to Skyrim. They're like, this is cave number 56. It's like, great. They did Monkey Island. They had the composer of Journey came out and conducted... an orchestral medley based on Journey, which was really nice, followed up by an orchestral medley of Earthworm Jim, which wasn't quite as powerful, because you listen to Journey and you think of all those people you lost along the way and all those kind of deep feelings it sort of tapped into, and then in the next bit it's all got videos of, like, Earthworm Jim shooting a cow, so it's just not quite as powerful.
Did the audience maintain a respectful silence?
No, they did. Well, no, because it's the thing, because it's really raucous because he basically comes out. It's got a great opener because I think he always opens with Castlevania because he loves doing the old guitar to Castlevania. And he does this huge kind of like, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Castlevania, and the audience just goes freaking mental. Like, I've never it's like a rock concert, you know, and he goes, I want you to like scream and shout whenever you recognize a tune and all this kind of thing. But the like, I think, because the British audience is quite polite, you know, they know that Journey like isn't really a place to be going woo, you know, over the top of it. It was good. Great. I tell you what, though, someone was eating some stinky old food.
You should have complained or something.
Well, no, because it's pretty hard to complain over the sound of someone, you know, wailing a guitar to Monkey Island.
No, it isn't. You just turn around to the person and you shake your fist at them.
Oh, no, that's I couldn't place it. Well, I'm hoping it was food and not a person.
Oh,
ooh,
yeah.
My.
It was definitely organic. that much I know. But yeah, it was really good. And I actually had a slightly egotistical moment. I had I got spotted by a reader who was dressed as M. Bison, and he came up to me and went, Matthew Castle, and I said, M. Bison.
Oh, that's one of those moments.
So that was really nice. Awesome. Yeah, that's all.
And then did
fun.
He proceed to beat the living crap out of you?
Yeah, and then he turned into an electric torpedo, which I could have done without. I was like, it just electrocuted my stomach with his head. I
was maybe like, maybe that was the smell, was your burning stomach flesh.
Oh yeah, it's probably that. It's like, does anyone else smell burning seared flesh? Yeah. And be like, that's where M. Bison electrocuted you. Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Awesome. Oh, well, that sounds like a whole load of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's coming to like Manchester or Birmingham in like a month or something.
Oh, great.
Maybe.
I'd really like to check that out. I very much enjoyed hearing about video games live and mini maps. Yeah, that thing that we've read. let's move on after this.
Another rotation, another new platform. This one, a futuristic platform. Yes, we are in the year 3000, where the Earth is collapsing in on itself and humanity is escaping in a space ark. On board the ark is a room where we are allowed to store games. It is the only room for games, and we are in charge of what games enter this room.
That's the most professional. It's like you're doing a radio play. It's amazing.
That was brilliant.
Oh yeah, I really buy into this. I'm kind of it's sort of like Orson Welles style.
Yeah. Well, you're buying into it because we're in it. We're in it.
Yeah,
we are in it. We live in that room.
I'm entering the space ark now, and I see the shining hull above me, and all this kind of jazz. Yes, it is our job to select the games which go into this ark. We propose the games to each other, though via the miracle of a weird time portal, we have been able to intercept communications from the year 2014, where some of our listeners back from then have proposed games to place in the ARC in this episode, which they presumably haven't listened to.
I think Alan, we talked over Alan a bit last week when he was actually explaining some of the technical detail how this happened. We actually, it's a time capsule, essentially. We ask you, the listener, to send us your choices, and then we just dig them up in the year 3000 from. It's a message to the message from the past that just lies dormant until the year 3000.
But what I like about this setup is that these games have been dormant in the time capsule all this time. But if we don't like them, we're just going to throw them into lava. So it's because that's the kind of the deal here.
These messages that have been carefully preserved, representing someone's hopes and dreams from hundreds of years ago, we're just going to give 5 to 10 seconds of consideration, and casually toss them into the flames, and then
stamp on them just with our boot,
and then send a message back through time to tell people that we have stamped on them.
Yeah, that's my favourite bit.
I think we should send back.
But I'm worried that we'll create some kind of time thing where if we send back a negative message. Next week, we'll open the time capsule and just find something horrible in it that they've left for us.
Oh, like some, like bees.
Bees.
Like a dog.
We're like, oh, dog, bees.
Space yeah. bees.
Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, we do not want yeah. that. Do not put
well,
bees
that's the
in
thing.
A
we
time
can
capsule.
Send, then we'll send space bees back. See how they like
oh,
that.
Oh, man. Maybe this is how the event was triggered. It was just like it's an escalating prank war.
Between us and 2014.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
Oh, my God. It's like it's Terminator, great when, you know, creates itself by going back in time.
It's a bit like the dumb waiter in that pub when we recorded in the pub and then, you know, burgers came up. But imagine if it was games from the year 3000 and obscene great. Messages. Or naked Arnold Schwarzenegger yeah. going back in time.
Just curled up inside a dumb waiter. Yeah, I could imagine that.
I need your clothes, your boots and your motorcycle.
Also let me out of the dumb waiter.
Right, we've got distracted.
And a pint of Diet Coke.
Good, so where were we?
So that brings us neatly back to the space arc.
Yeah.
So the committee is in session. We're going to look at the different proposals for what's going to be, you know, the best example. And this week, the genre is the Metroidvania genre.
So, Matthew, line us up a Metroidvania.
So, as you mentioned, we've taken on board some listener suggestions, and as it happens, someone has picked the same game that I've chosen to place in the space arc. I'm on the same wavelength as, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Chris Pengilly, and we have both picked Shadow Complex for the Xbox 360.
Mm.
Which, have either of you played Shadow Complex?
I haven't, actually.
No.
Okay. Oh, great. I could basically say whatever I like about it. You'd have no idea.
It's the greatest game of all time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Sell us on it.
So it is a 2D side-on exploring game set in the Shadow Complex itself, which is, unless I'm misreading that title, I don't know, maybe it's a psychological thing. Anyway, which is like a big military base. And you're kind of out hitchhiking and you end up in this thing, your girlfriend goes missing and you sort of follow her down into a cave, and then it turns out you're in a military base and it's all very mysterious. But what I really like about this, and I think what it demonstrates brilliantly in the sort of Metroidvania genre, is that the powers you unlock are really awesomely versatile, in that they are, you know, you unlock guns and more powerful versions of guns, and that's all fine. But they're, instead of just being like Metroid power-ups where you kind of, a lot of it revolves around this weapon opens this door, so you're like, you need the ice beam for the ice door and you need the plasma beam for the plasma door or whatever. A lot of the things in Shadow Complex, or my favourite things in Shadow Complex, are based around navigation. So you have like a gun which basically fires what looks like, you know, that sort of filling, like, what's it called? A bit like No More Nails, that sort of filling stuff you get for cracks.
Polyfiller.
It sort of inflates like that, and you can kind of fire big globs of it at the wall and build platforms out of it. So you can literally build a platform anywhere, which I think is a really awesome power in a game which is about exploring platforms. The ability to start building actually really opens up the space in interesting ways. And you get like a super fast, like if you can run long enough in a straight line, you're going to go into this sort of super running mode where you can run on walls and ceilings and upside down. And it just kind of, you suddenly realize that this base you've been exploring this whole time, you know, what was just a warehouse where you had like a huge gunfight, you actually go, well, this warehouse is long enough for me to get up to this speed. And then you get up and then you realize you can sort of charge up the wall and you discover a whole new area. And for me, that's the sort of thrill of Metroidvanias. It's discovering kind of new dimensions and new perspectives on familiar locations with new powers. And for me, Shadow Complex does that brilliantly. I think it uses kind of modern tech, because it was 360, so it's a little bit kind of after sort of the Metroids and whatnot. And it uses modern technology to make a really kind of sort of advanced versions of what you can do with those powers. It's really ambitious. It was made by Cher, who now just seemed to churn.
By Cher?
No, not Cher. Do you believe in life after Shadow Complex? No.
That's a great Cher joke, because you took the name of her hit single, Do You Believe in Life After Love? And then you replaced the word love with the name of the game that you're talking about.
Yeah. It's in his shadow complex.
Sorry, that's a bit mean.
If I could turn back shadow complex.
I tell you what, if I'd written that joke, I say joke, in Endgamer, you would have given me real grief for it back in the day. that certainly wouldn't have made the editorial check.
it may not make the editorial check for this podcast.
Oh, well, please actually do edit that out. That was terrible.
But my ones were really good.
Yeah, Alan's was great. It's made by Cher, who have since, they make that Infinity Blade game for iOS, which I hate.
Oh, so I think right,
I think it's really disappointing that they're not making Shadow Complex 2, and I would like to bring it into the space arc, because it's a good example of the genre. It's a lot of fun. You know, I think in the horrible confines of the space arc, people will want to have games that kind of show them about how to use space in fun ways. You know, because it'll be like, that's not just a corridor. It's a corridor you can run down. That's my
pitch. It sounds good. It sounds really good. Yeah, I think you made a great case, Matthew. I think it's in, from my point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Chris, thank you.
Yep. Chris, top work.
Yeah, I'd like to play this game. I'm going to say no, because I haven't played it, and I feel that I can't really say yes to a game I know nothing about. I can't give up precious space arc room to just on a.
I haven't played it.
No, but that I think you're being very trusting in Matthew that this is going to be worthy of the space.
He's
arc.
An award-winning journalist, and Chris. Mark.
That's true. He was award-winning in 2014, but it's been many years since he's won an award.
How do you know I'm not sitting in the room with a big pile of GMAs behind me?
Yeah, it's possible. But, you know, not. I just feel I have to stay true to my own beliefs, and if I don't know how a game plays,
your own beliefs.
Shadow Complex is in anyway. It's in.
Yeah.
It's in.
Yeah, nice.
So there it goes, slotted into our.
Now this games room's really beginning to become something special, with the addition of Shadow Complex.
Yeah. We've got bored with. I'm gonna just Operation I'm Wolf.
We are shooting gunk balls in excitement.
Right, Alan. Let's hear what you've got coming up the ramp.
There's a ramp. Okay. It's SteamWorld Dig for the Nintendo 3S or PC, though probably not as good on the PC, but it's a corker on the 3DS. Right. Yeah, SteamWorld Dig, quite a recent game. You are a little robot and in a sort of slightly Old Westy type world, so it's got a kind of steam thing. You know, things run on water. Like, you know, when you jump, it uses a little bit of water and stuff like that. So it's got a kind of fuel mechanic in it. And there are lanterns that burn oil and stuff like that. So the world is kind of an interesting mashup of these little robots and a kind of steam old world type thing. And you've inherited this mine from your uncle, who has disappeared, you know, and he's left this thing to you. And so you're there to explore. And explore you do. But what makes SteamWorld Dig quite different is you're digging down into solid rock. And you might come across a chamber, or that you might come across an enemy buried in the rock. You might sort of inadvertently free them with your drill or your pickaxe. So you're constantly going down. But when you're going down, you always are mindful of how to get back. So the level design is kind of procedurally generated. If you haven't played it, each game is different from someone else's, so like the layout of things. But at a certain depth, you're going to get a door to a different area, to like a mini dungeon or something like that, where you have to, you know, get through a more structured gameplay environment to unlock a new power-up or something like that. Or, you know, as you go deeper and deeper, then you find your way into a totally different area of the mine. And you're kind of going deeper and deeper and deeper, trying to unearth the mystery of what happened to your uncle and what's happening. But as you go down, you're gathering rocks and ores and minerals and stuff that you have to get back up to the surface in order to sell. And that's where you get the money to upgrade your powers.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can unlock some things just through exploration, but other things you upgrade through money. So there's this really interesting risk-reward mechanism going on, which is very nicely balanced, where you can go deeper and go scouring kind of methodically for ore, but you're always got to be aware of how much light is left in your lamp, or how much steam you've got left to dig your way out, to jump your way out if you're going to jump.
Yes.
Or build a ladder. And you can buy ropes and you can buy things like that. So there's different kind of upgrade-y type options as well. Like you might want to make your jumping mechanism a bit more fuel efficient, or you might want to buy a bigger tank so you can hold more water so you can do more jumps, or you can use your drill more, or you can upgrade your pickaxe so you can dig more efficiently and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there's this really lovely, the repeated moment, I suppose, you get in it is where there's something just at the edge of your vision and you think it's some ore or something like that. So you think, I'll sort of carefully make my way across to that. But you're conscious that the light is going to run out and you're going to have to make your way back in the dark. Or you might inadvertently dig through and find yourself in a big cavern with a load of enemies and stuff like that.
Sweet.
I think some other games like Terraria have trod
similar.
Yeah,
it does sound
territory. Yeah.
Well, but I haven't played SteamWorld Dig, but I'm really captivated by it, and so I'm going to say yes to SteamWorld Dig. And Matthew's shaking.
Well, that's like that's double standards. Like,
I know I'm not complaining.
Like,
okay.
I can't play it because I've not played it. But Alan's painted such a captivating image of it in my mind.
Yeah. He made the difference.
Well, listen, I'm glad you put it in, because I would put it in as well. SteamWorld Dig is a brilliant, brilliant game. The guys who made it, Image and Form, we were reasonably good chums with them on O&M. They're really super cool guys. Swedish studio. Their sort of leader, I'm terrible at pronouncing names. I think it's Brianne is just a mad, crazy dude, and really sends the best emails. So I'm going to put it in the space art, because every time I see it, I'll think, oh, I really like that guy who lived a thousand years ago.
Remind you of happy times.
Remind me of better times. You know, yes, great game, brilliant game. In the Ark.
All thumbs up. Hooray.
Three yeses. Nice. Yeah. Great. Well, it's time for me to introduce my Space Ark game then, just before we hit some listener choice.
I wonder if it's something I've played.
Well, I've given you, that's the beauty of it, I've given you two options for games you haven't played, if you haven't. It's Cave Story. Japanese name was Matthew. You're better at remembering this than me.
It was like wasn't it like something
Monogatari?
Yeah,
Dengetsu. Or something. Yes. So it's probably 2005 or 2006 or something like that. So it's one guy, as far as I know, and it's a very cute looking 8-bit graphics, originally on PC. Free as well, and just super cute. And you play a little dude who I can't remember the plot actually, but you kind of arrive in a strange world, the things I remember best about it is having a very good upgradable weapon that eventually becomes a sort of big whooshing sort of white space gun that lets you actually, you can use as a jetpack to kind of float across levels, which is really fun. I remember it very well for giant blocky looking elephants.
Rabbits.
There were some elephants, I think, but rabbits?
The main characters were rabbits.
Yeah, but on like the first or second major area, which is very linear, it's like left to right.
Yeah.
And there's some big blocky elephants. And I remember you can
there's, shoot an, there's like an evil toaster thing.
Yeah, is that the mate? Is that really?
Balrog or Balrog?
Yes, that's right, and he's quite funny.
Yeah,
And it's quite touchingly. There's a couple of quite touching moments. I won't sort of spoil, but there's a real kind of the music and the look of it. There's just a strange sort of melancholy feeling about it. I can't quite put my finger on, but I just always really, it just, you know, as just a free PC game, it just came from nowhere.
It's on my list of things I really must get round to playing, which is quite
really
long.
Yeah, it's really good. And loads of the game is just kind of hidden away, because there's kind of at least two endings. I don't know how many exactly, but I know you can get to an ending, and you're like, oh, okay, well, fair enough, I'm done. But then if you just have to kind of scoot off in a different direction, and there's another swathe of game just kind of like hidden off in a different direction. So, it's, I don't know, my love for Cave Story is more a kind of feeling than very many specific memories and, you know, a couple of standout moments. But it's just the kind of the atmosphere of it. And maybe it isn't a traditional Metroidvania. It's quite linear. You do unlock, you know, you need a certain weapon or a certain thing to unlock routes, but it's not got the huge sort of, opening up map of a true Metroidvania game. But even so, it's just magical. It's just a very magical game. And I really think, like you say, Alan, it's a game everyone should play. You know, there's something about it that you're really missing out if you haven't played Cave Story. And yeah, so who, you know, if we want anything on the space art, we want a sense of melancholy and sort of, you know, difficult to pinpoint sadness.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it should be quite easy to pinpoint our sadness on the arc, I would think. Yeah. Pretty much. It's pretty much the elephant in the room, right?
You just point at the room where we've put all the games from that we've selected for the space and make a sad face. Cave Story. Tell me what you think.
I've got mixed feelings, Mark. I've got mixed feelings about this.
You've just said this was on your list of games to play.
Oh, well, I suppose I'm never going to get the chance to play it
if you put it in the lava.
That's a good point you make. Yeah, good point you make.
Hey, you'll have to tear the strip off your list and throw that in the lava as well. It'll torment you for the rest of time.
But I take my role on the committee extremely seriously, as regular listeners will know. I take it deadly seriously. You know, it's a matter of life and death. So, you know, it's more important than my list of games I would like to play personally, you know? I don't know. I don't know. I'm honestly torn. I'm torn. Because that melancholy thing is a bit of a knock for it.
It's got lovely music. Just lovely.
The 8-bit thing is a bit of a knock, but then...
Lovely music.
Matthew?
I really like Cave Story. I think some of the Cave Story love got tarnished a bit by, I think it was the spirit of the thing, this sort of weird little free kind of curio, got kind of destroyed a bit by how many times they re-released it on Nintendo platforms. Like, it seemed that we seemed to be reviewing it like every other month. But even towards the end where I was like, oh, not freaking Cave Story again, like, it still doesn't quite diminish the fact that Cave Story is a really sweet game, beautifully made. It's got a really nice spirit to it. I think the fact that it's like the creation of one person is particularly special, because it's like their strange little world that they kind of invite you into, and it's quite old school in that it has all these sort of secret rules to it that you don't really know until you've really kind of got to grips with it. You know, there's like, you can sort of trade certain weapons into better weapons, but you wouldn't know until you discover it. You know, it's kind of got that old sort of, you know, almost like the sort of the sort of earlier Zeldas, earlier Marios. There's a kind of sense of discovery to it, which I really like. And I think everyone on the arc will have fun discovering that stuff too. So I think it's a yes from me.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm saying yes to the original one. All the scamming Wii ports can they can do one and get in the lava.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fine by me. It's in.
Three yeses. A great victory for Mark Green and Cave Story.
Well, it's more of a victory for Cave Story.
Oh, well,
riding the old Cave Story bandwagon there. Like,
no one's going to remember. Who actually wrote these games. We could definitely pass ourselves off as the author of Operation Wolf Cave Story.
You're going to tell everyone that you made the Cave Story, Beetle Adventure Racing, and The Room.
Yeah,
I'm going to impress people. I'm going to impress women in bars with that claim.
In the Space Arc bar.
Alan, but there's no alcohol in the year 3000.
Well, neither are there anybody that I'm desperately attracted to either. No offence.
Well, your future is really depressing, Alan. Not only were you I don't think you did know, but you were thinking of casting aside a game, you know, games that you want to play, you're quite happy to never see again and never get the chance to play. But also, you will never find love. In the future, you are forever alone because you have already decided that the tens of thousands of people who've been selected to populate the rest of humanity, you don't fancy anymore.
Well, that's what you don't realise, that Alan's also on the people selection committee as well as the games.
Oh, so he's got his list of people that he'd quite like to go out with, and he's threw them in the lava.
None of that,
because it's not about him.
That's that is pretty serious, isn't it?
That is grim. Yeah. Oh man, let's lighten the mood by let's have a look at some listener contributions.
Yeah,
I've got a couple of people who want to put Batman games in, and they've chosen different Batman games, but I think we could kind of consider them together. So Andrew Rice suggests Batman Arkham City. He says it was a close call between that and Guacamelee, a game none of us have considered. But I thought Batman would fit more with the slightly rule-bending nature of Typing of the Dead and SSX. Well, that's nice. That's my two choices.
Well done rule-bending. For setting a precedent there.
I know. I'm on the committee. I know what the rules are. Why should Bats be in the Ark? It's a game that's jam-packed with things to find and do. The combat is superb. The Riddler trophies are both plentiful and mind-bending. And there are loads of combat/predator challenges to whittle away the many hours of travelling through the vast expanse that is space. He's forgotten we've got Operation Wolf as well. We're quite happy with that. Heck, he says.
Oh, steady on.
If there's a Game of the Year edition that you can still track down in the future, you'll get even more bang for you buck. I think he means your buck.
Yeah.
Well, slot on the arc. Get even more bang for your buck. Well, slot on the arc. Right? I see. It's you get bang for your slot. So why is it...
What?
I don't think I do get it. So,
I don't know. I don't know if I like where this is going.
Why is it a good Metroidvania? Tons of places you can't get to that you need more gadgets to progress.
Yeah.
And loads of Riddler trophies that you need more, including optional gadgets to grab. What more could you want? Look forwards to hearing what you think deserves the spot on the arc. Regards, Andrew Rice, hopefully dead many years before the tragic event. His words, not mine.
Yeah, that's important to stress. That's dark, Greener.
So that's Iron City. I'll just read... Alex Jones,
That's actually made me feel kind of sad to think that he's dead. That he acknowledges his own death by the time we've heard it. It's like, by the time you have heard this, I will be dead.
I want to press F to pay my respects. So, Alex Jones, he's written quite an interesting message. I may put it up on the Twitter, because it says, this message has been scanned and approved by the Space Arc Overlords. Blimey. Be aware that all time-travelling correspondence will be monitored. No one told us that. Any attempts to warn loved ones of the event will result in the immediate withdrawal of cola bottle dispensation.
But what about, you know, when we were going to send, like, dog mess through?
Oh, we're not, I see, we're not allowed to warn people in the past about the event.
But
oh,
it's all right to send back naked Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's okay.
Fine. That's what the future's all about. Future impingements may result in your disintegration. Oh, what? Okay. Have a lovely day. That's nice.
I'm duly warned.
So, respected video game committee of the Space Arc, I write to you from the depths of history to suggest a game which surely deserves a place in the hallowed space banks of your mighty vessel.
I'm imagining him with a beard now.
Yeah, a very long beard.
Long beard from the past.
I put it to you that Batman Arkham Asylum deserves to be slotted, slotted alongside other classics such as SSX and The Room.
great Room burn. Zing. I wish it's The Room burned.
The people at the tube are listening, Matthew. They'll start burning our room. It would just be immediate. It would just be immediately incinerated. Yeah. Be careful what you say. It's not the most traditional example of the genre, mainly because of its 3D third-person perspective. But the system of unlocking gear to progressively explore more and more of the world is correct and present. The tight, snaking corridors of the titular asylum. Look at this. Are as secret packed as they are atmospheric, squeezing a multitude of uses from every element of Batman's arsenal. Using that tool set to not only reach previously unexplored areas, as is traditional, but also to pick off increasingly frantic goons in stealth sections makes this the perfect evolution of a genre that's remained largely unchanged for decades. How does he know that? He's speaking for 2014. I'll tell you what, Metroidvania went nuts after 2014, pal. It's all over the shop.
It was the Metroidvania surge.
What say you? Ah, Alex Jones. So Alex Jones and Andrew Rice, both with Batman. What do we think about Batman games in the Space Arc?
Do you want my first thought?
Yeah.
My first thought was, what the actual heck are you talking about?
that famous acronym, WTH.
Yep.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, Arkham Asylum... You melted my mind, Andrew and Adam, when you...
Since you've been washing your hair in the lava again.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, Alan. Alan, we have warned you about that.
It's so warm. It tingles. It's good for my dandruff. It's three dimensions, which blew my mind. Maybe I've got a very reductive view of what a Metroidvania-type game is.
Well, you have got 3D Metroid games that...
My mind is slightly blown by the proposition. Those games would also fit into other genres. And this is kind of a potential problem that the committee may face in future weeks, is you could have the same game nominated under different genres. Like, I could try and sneak in some rubbish I've had thrown out in the past and just try and jam it in under something else.
Just picking it out of the lava and dusting it off for another go.
But how about for this other genre? Yeah.
That game is smoking at the corner. I think we've had this before. okay, so it's a no for Batman from you then, Alan. Matthew?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think they are Metroidvania games. I think, as Alex and Andy said, the kind of use of sort of unlockable powers giving you a kind of a new approach to the environment, I think to me is one of the core things at the heart of Metroidvania stuff. Even though it's not in 2D, I think the rules still apply. I think so. They get a yes from me. They're great games.
They are amazing games. I'm not having a pop at the games. They are phenomenal.
Yeah, I think I do get that feeling of from I've only played Arkham Asylum actually so far, but I have got Arkham City waiting in my Steam library, along with 500 other games I'm never going to get around to playing.
Is your Steam library all your games which have been evaporated by lava?
Yeah.
Like, technically, everything we've thrown out is now a Steam library. But
yeah, oh, that's sad.
Do you mean you're? Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
what you mean.
But I do get that that thing of wandering down corridors and thinking, oh, there's a place there that I want to come back to and explore when I've found whatever weapon will let me open up that area. Yeah, and it's got that, gives me that tingle of excitement. So yeah, I would definitely put it in. I think that's generally a yes from us then. Let's do some rapid fire space art committee decisions.
Oh God, let's just get to the cola bottles, shall we?
Oh, man.
I'm just going to stick my mouth to the tube and just start yelling yes.
Always a good idea.
Guacamole, yes. Nom 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 nom. Shadow Complex, yes. Nom 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 nom.
Okay, so we've had from Guacamole, lots of people nominating Guacamole. We've got Simon Ball, who says it's colourful, adventurous, dark and wacky, brackets in the best way, with plenty of challenge and wit, a shoo-in. Guacamole, quick, rapid fire.
I'd say just as Guacamole's gameplay flips between the world of the living and the world of the dead, I say we cast it out of the ark from our world of the living into the world of the dead.
Ooh, I like what you've done there. Yeah, I felt slightly ambivalently towards it when I played it. I thought this is fine, but I didn't get particularly excited. So on that basis, no place for mediocrity. Out it goes. How many people have we just alienated, just out of interest?
I only threw it into the lava so I could do that Land of the Dead bit. I actually really like Guacamole.
Yeah. Oh. So was that a no then? No, no's all round.
I think it's a fat no.
This guy called Fronkhead.
Fronkhead?
Fronk. Oh, right. F-R-O-N-K. He or she has nominated that Hydro Venture from the Wii. That's an interesting one because that is kind of a Metroidvania, isn't it?
You
control some water. And you tilt the level to guide the water around this kind of playground for water.
You know, you move around because it's all set in a big storybook which you're tilting. Book, so you're like moving from page to page. It's almost like you're crossing through panels of a comic book. I like it. I'd put that in as a really interesting, like probably one of the most sort of novel takes on the Metroidvania. I'd be happy to see Hydro Venture join.
I haven't played it. I don't know. I missed out on it. Very interesting.
Well, I'm saying yes. So you don't have to make you don't have to make a decision.
Oh my God, we're really filling the arc this week.
So thank you to everyone for all your space arc submissions this week. Next week we're going to be doing rhythm games. So yeah, send us your selections for coming up the space arc and staying out of the lava. You can tweet us at Rotating Podcast, or you can email us at trp@therotatingplatform.com. Or you can go on our Facebook page, look for The Rotating Platform there. And now this. All right, so, there's a gentle slowing the platform, spinning, slowing, rotating, slowing down. And it stopped. And that's the end of this week's episode of The Rotating Platform. We hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks to everyone who sent us in stuff. And do keep sending us stuff. We do want to receive your a cappella game tunes. Stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Just stuff. Send us your a cappella game tunes. Send us your selections for Space Art next week, which is rhythm games. And you can do that. You can look for us on Facebook. You can contact us via Twitter at Rotating Podcast, and you can email us at trp@therotatingplatform.com. It's been a pleasure serving you this week, and we hope to feel your presence on the other side of the podcast next week. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.